90.3 KNBA and classic Big Star in the Street. In front of that, we heard from Jason Isbell and Amanda Shires. What a beautiful version of Warren Zevon's Mutineer. That was recorded, by the way, live in the studios of one of our PAL stations, WNRN, in Charlottesville. It was a new music from Lily Hyatt in there, The Night David Bowie Died. Nice rocker from Lily. Trinity Lane is her new album. A fun song from Suzanne Vega, Harper Lee, and Iron and Wine started us out from his new album, Beast Epic, with Call It Dreaming. 8:24, coming up in 8:25, it is the Morning Line program for Friday, TGIF. Just a reminder, of course, as we come up on this three-day weekend, where did the summer go? Anyway, as we come up on the three-day weekend, Labor Day marks a change in the seasons, and it's certainly often a weekend of action in politics, and there's a lot to report about American Indian and Alaska Native candidates, and you are invited cordially to tune in a little over an hour and a half from now, 10 o'clock this morning. It's a special edition of the Trey Hunt Report, the election edition. So please do stick around for that. Okay, it is Morning Line for Friday. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Danny Preston.
And I'm Frank Chaife. Look, KNBA loves to keep you in tune with our community. And if you've got some events or a nonprofit service announcement, you can send us an email. feedback@knba.org is the place to go. I've got a guest in the studio today that's, something very close to her heart is an event that was coming up. That's you did mention it's Friday, and it's First Friday in this case. So we've got Panua Lucier here in the studio, and we're talking about an event that's tonight. It's the it's an opening, an art opening, for First Friday art opening, and the artist is your father.
Yes.
So you were mentioning earlier that not a lot of people knew your father as an artist. More, he had these different roles, kind of across the state.
Yes. So. My father came to Anchorage. He arrived here at the age of 15, following his parents, who were already here. And he went on to earn a degree in science, biology. And so that took him also. There were a couple of anthropologists that took him under their wing, and he went on some archaeological digs as a very young man up in northwest Alaska. And that kind of spoke to him, and he continued that work in anthropology and documenting the Inupiaq culture in northwest Alaska till the very end. And then we moved to Anchorage after I was born, and he was employed as a game biologist at Fish and Game. So people knew him as a biologist, and people knew him also, both of my parents actually were really, really involved in promoting Native culture in the community of Anchorage in the early 60s. They were a part of a group that formed Urban Natives United, which the mission was to promote Native culture, particularly in schools, to educate people about Native culture. They formed a traditional dance group. It was a cross-sector of people, Inupiaq, Yupik, people dancing together, and they would perform. And so that's how he was known in Anchorage, in the community, and in Alaska before he left in the early 80s.
And so in those times, this is really progressive stuff to say, hey, we're Native and we're dancing our traditional songs. I mean, especially back then in the 70s. And
yes, it was. It really was.
It's radical stuff, right?
Yes, it was. I think people living in Anchorage, the Natives that were here needed to feel a sense of community and formed this group, and they met. I remember having dance practice in our house coming home from school, walking up the driveway, and you could hear the drums, boom, 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 just beating from the house. You could just hear it, and I'd walk in, and there'd be all the elders, and they would just be having dance practice in our little living room out in Sand Lake where we lived. And, yeah, that's a very strong memory that I have, yeah.
And so over the years, you know, he did this art as well that we're going to have a chance to see tonight at about 6 o'clock.
Yes, the reception's from 6 to 8.
And over the years, this, like you mentioned, he was prolific. How much art do you think he did over the years?
Oh, my gosh. After he passed away in 2013, and my brother and I began the process of gathering his things together, we actually divided up the art. And in little nooks and crannies, we kept finding more and more. It was just, he logged all of his art. So there's over 1,400 pieces of art logged in his art logs. I mean, he was prolific. He made cards, of which I will be bringing some tonight to the art First Friday. Each individual card is an original piece of art. He didn't mass produce these, you know, make one and print them off. Each one is an original piece of art. And the most intriguing thing is the titles. If you don't look at the titles, you're missing half the message, because the titles are so often very humorous, and his art is often very humorous. He had a sense of humor, and that comes out in his art. And his art is really hard to describe, because it's not a certain genre, or it's multi-medium, and it's just wonderful. It's just almost childlike. So it's, he was prolific. I have boxes and boxes and binders of art.
And, I myself had recently lost my father, so to see something that he created, and I'm sure that resonates with you kind of in your mourning time.
It is. It's a treasure. It's something to be treasured. It's something that we have a piece of him, because he put his whole heart and soul into his art. I mean, it was his expression of his feelings, and so they are very precious to me and our family. And there are some pieces that are not for sale just because of that. They're very special. And then there will be some pieces for sale. And of course, he wanted the world to see it and share in it. So that's, you know, he had pieces for sale. He also kept some that were precious to him, but he wanted people to have it and share it. So that's why I'm doing this today.
I like his quote here, and it ends with, "Art is the only magic left in modern life." And I'm like, you know, that kind of resonates with me, as far as, like, you see all these technologies, and you see, why don't you Photoshop that? It'll look better, or all this other stuff. And to hear that somebody put their hands to this art and really made it, I'm looking forward to seeing this.
Yes, and he did, he did put his heart and soul into it, and it's not mass-produced. He did do a few prints, block prints that can be printed, but those are his original pieces. Really excited.
How long did it take to kind of put this all together into a format that...
Well, it meant that I needed to go back and resort through all the pieces and figure out which ones that I wanted to share. So it was fortunately that I took 2 weeks off from work, just because I needed to, and I was able to spend those whole 2 weeks sorting through and maybe framing a few pieces that were matted but not framed. So it took some time to resort through. They were, they've been in boxes and stored. I've got binders and binders of matted pieces that are just in sleeves, sorting through those and really looking at what people enjoy seeing. So it was put a lot of time and energy into this to make sure I picked pieces that I thought people would enjoy seeing.
So in a way, you're our curator for exhibit.
Yeah, I guess you could say that in some ways. Yeah.
Did you notice things that you'd say his experiences, like the urban native, united and this various things, informed his art?
It did. He did a number of pieces that featured native dancing, and I think his experiences in Alaska, this, coming up as a very young man, and that experience and working with elders and gathering stories, and the elders told him, "You're one of us." And so I think he felt a sense of belonging, and I think that was really, really important to him when he felt that sense of belonging. He was an only child. His parents were alcoholics, so he had a very kind of tough childhood. His grandmother was his rock, so she took care of him. But when he came to Alaska, he was pretty much on his own. His parents divorced when he was still in high school. He went to Anchorage High School. He actually never finished. He just decided, "I'm going to the university." And he was pretty much on his own. So those connections that he made to people and to elders and the culture, I think he just felt like this is where he belonged, and this became a part of him. So it does. This piece that I have, this little card here, shows a piece. It's called Before, and it's very tribal looking. So I think there, it does show up in his art in a lot of different ways.
And when he was here and kind of as a during high school and all that time, that was kind of like, was that somewhat near? I'm just trying to get a time frame. Is that's kind of like right around statehood, if I'm thinking correctly?
Actually, that would have been a little bit before. He arrived here in 1942.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So statehood was, of course, it was 59, so it was a little bit before. There was just one high school, Anchorage High School, downtown on G or H Street. I don't remember where. The building's not there anymore, but yeah.
And so the town was a lot smaller, and everything was also... it seems like that this is a chance to see a person's work that was coming through different times and different layers of times and technologies and populations. And
yes, definitely. And his medium, he's a multimedia. I describe him as a multimedia artist because he mainly used recycled materials like backs of envelopes or paper that came through the mail, junk mail, and they used wood. He made etchings in wood and art on wood blocks. He used wood. He made a lot of jewelry. I'm not bringing any jewelry this evening, but he made jewelry, pendants on metal. His paintings are ink, gouache, pastels, and so it crosses. Multimedia, and his art is really hard to describe because it's not just one style and different subjects. So there isn't a focus on a certain type of subject. It's some of it's cubism, realism, surrealism. Yeah.
And it sounds like we know he was a busy fella. And so it's like
yes.
He made this time to make this.
He pretty much, when he left Alaska and ended up in Springfield, Eugene, Oregon, he was retired, of course, from the Department of Fish and Game. He worked there 20 years as a biologist. He specialized in caribou. excuse me. So when he was retired, his life became around gardening, his art, and writing. He continued his writing for scientific journals, so he spent a lot of time writing, and I have his last manuscript that he said to me, you need to try to find a way to get this published. It's on death and renewal in the Inupiaq culture. And so he's documented through his work about death and renewal, and that's a really important part of, what are our beliefs. So I've yet to do that. It's another thing on top of this First Friday thing that I wanted to do, is to try to get that done as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, as I see you as a person who's kind of honoring that legacy, and I really appreciate seeing all this, and I can't wait to check out the artwork. So once again, the event, it's a First Friday event at Summit Spice and Tea on Denali Street from 6 to 8 tonight.
Yes, we'll have cookies in. There'll be hot tea or cold tea available too. So please come out and see.
Okay, thanks very much, Frank. And thank you so much, Benu. It's so nice to see you. You haven't been on the program for a while.
Yes,
so it's good.
Thank you for having me.
You're so welcome. I'm picking up on this. Frank had mentioned a quote of your father's, art is the only magic left in modern life. A little bit earlier in the same quote, I love the line where he says, I am a rational writer, but less than rational, more impulsive artist. And I'm thinking that's pretty much what art's all about.
It is.
Okay. Thanks again, Benu.
Thank you.
Summit Spice and Tea Company, 3030 Denali Street in Midtown, 6 to 8 o'clock this evening. It's 8:38. Just ahead, Blues Traveler and a new track from Randy Newman.
CITC operates CHANLUT, a recovery and reentry program that offers support and structure for men reentering into society working towards healthy lifestyles. The CHANLUT program is culturally relevant to Alaska Native men, but is open to all men who want to recover and move forward in their lives. Learn more at citci.org/recovery or call 907-793-3200.
A major federal policy aimed at promoting food safety will change the way farms and other agricultural businesses grow and distribute food. The policy includes tribal farmers and food processors. We'll talk about some obstacles to complying with the new law and why some people say it's a threat to sovereignty. All this on the next Native America Calling.
Native America Calling is heard weekday mornings at 9 on KMBA, Alaska's Native Voice.